This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Given the fact that three women currently sit on the United States Supreme Court, and three women also sit on the Massachusetts highest court, and that women make up almost 50% of law school students, it can be easy to forget that the law has not always been a welcoming profession for women.
In fact, in Massachusetts, the legal profession was openly hostile to women for decades, until 1882, when a woman named Lelia J. Robinson petitioned the Supreme Judicial Court for the right to join the Massachusetts Bar. There's much more to her story, which we'll hear in a moment.
Since Robinson's pioneering efforts, Massachusetts women have continued to push the legal profession forward. Elena Kagan, former dean of the Harvard Law School, is now on the Supreme Court. Retired SJC Chief Justice Margaret Marshall is the person who wrote the decision that legalized gay marriage in Massachusetts. Their stories and the history of women in the law are told in the new book, Breaking Barriers, the Unfinished Story of Women Lawyers and Judges in Massachusetts. And joining us today are two of the book's editors. First, the Honorable Margot Botsford. She's currently sitting Associate Justice of the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court. Judge Botsford, welcome to Radio Boston. Pleasure to have you on the show.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Also with us is Barbara Berenson. She's a senior attorney at the SJC as well. Barbara Berenson, great to have you back on Radio Boston.
It's lovely to be here. Thank you.
Well, there's a lot to talk about in the book that you've written, and I'm also going to be a little churlish and tease listeners with the hint that we're going to talk about Wonder Woman, too, in a little bit. But first, Judge Botsford, I thought I might start with you and just get a sense from your personal experience being a lawyer and a judge on the state's highest court now about how being a woman has, influenced or had an impact, if at all, in your experience of the law in Massachusetts, in your career, I should say.
Well, I think it has had some, in the sense that when I graduated from law school in 1973, then I clerked on the Supreme Judicial Court for a year, and I was the only woman at the time doing that. Having done that, I think that certain opportunities opened themselves up. And so, in a sense, I think being one of fewer women graduates at the time, it was probably easier to find jobs than might be the case now. I mean, in part, it was easier to find jobs as a lawyer at mm-hmm. the time. So in that sense, I think it has. But I also think that I spent most of my career as a lawyer in the public sector. And my own experience in the public sector was that the opportunities for women to do things, to have more responsibility, was significantly greater than in the private sector.
Okay.
And so in that sense, you got to sort of advance faster and have a greater breadth of experience than I think might have otherwise been the case.
You know, in the introduction to this segment, we sort of talked a little bit about, and we'll get into it in more detail, in terms of the challenges that women have had to overcome in the legal profession in Massachusetts. Did you ever feel any challenge by virtue of the fact that you are a woman in the profession?
No.
You did not?
No. I think that's not a usual experience. I think when you read through the book, you find many people who, for whom that was not true. Certainly, many people before my time and people after my time in various settings. But as I say, I think in part because of my spending so much time in the public sector and my private sector experience after 1 year in a firm, but the other private sector experience was in a firm that I started, so it was a little harder to feel than you had been discriminated against. So in that sense, I did not really experience that.
Well, Barbara Berenson, we were speaking about Lelia J. Robinson, the first woman admitted to the Massachusetts bar, but it wasn't easy. She, as we hinted in the introduction, she had to petition the SJC. The SJC denied her petition on what grounds in 1881-82?
The SJC found that while she was arguably a citizen, simply being a citizen was not enough for admission to the bar. And what Lelia Robinson then did was work with the legislature and obtain a change in the law, which she actually was able to do quite readily. So that does suggest that even though the SJC was unfriendly to her, there clearly was enough sentiment in the Massachusetts legislature that felt that it was time for women to be admitted to the Massachusetts bar.
This was a case in which, just to be clear, that the SJC, the highest court in the state, was behind the times because, I mean, she had to get the law changed through the legislature, and that did happen. It was easier.
Yes, the SJC was behind the times, and the law was changed in Massachusetts. There's a chart in the book in which we show when the first woman was admitted to each one of the 50 states, or as states were came into the country. And Massachusetts was relatively early, not at the forefront, but in that era of the 1870s, 80s, 90s, many states admitted their first woman to the bar.
It was interesting, this chart, because I noticed that there were a lot of states, for example, in the sort of Midwest, western part of the country that were actually way ahead of Massachusetts.
Way ahead,
right. And why is that?
Well, I think it's probably because those states were less entrenched. There was less history. Things hadn't always been done a certain way. And one of the really fascinating things about Lelia Robinson, she was only admitted to the bar in 1882, and she sadly died quite young in 1891. Mm-hmm. But yet she spent several years of her career in Washington State because she felt that it was friendlier to women out there.
Mm. So she was a pioneering woman in terms of women being admitted to the bar. Judge Botsford, what about women who actually blazed the trail for you and ended up being judges? Who are some of the key figures there in the history of Massachusetts?
Well, I think for me, my key figure was Ruth Abrams, who was the first woman justice on the Supreme Judicial Court and a huge advocate for women advancing. She had also been an assistant district attorney in Middlesex County, which I was, and she just was she took it upon herself to guide a lot of people through their careers and through, you know, encouraging people to apply for judgeships, and so I think, you know, she's the person that most comes to mind for me. It is also the case that I think if you look at the explosion of women becoming judges, I forget the exact years, but in 1970 I think there was 13, and now there's significantly more, 144 I think, something like that. In that period of time, in the 70s and 80s, the women's bar organizations, Women's Bar Association, Massachusetts Association of Women Lawyers, got very active in encouraging women to apply and push forward.
Well, there's another interesting story of a woman who's contemporaneous to Lelia J. Robinson. That's Mary Ann Green. And she, I guess, and other women of the time, in the book you write that they sort of embody this conflict that I would say has stuck with women, you know, since the early 19th century, between gender and professional identity. And you quote that the identity as the burden of, quote, double consciousness that confronted every woman who wishes to be a lawyer. So, Barbara Berenson, what do you mean by that double consciousness?
Well, I should first say that, you know, we are the editors of the book, so that chapter is actually written by Tufts history professor Virginia Drachman. So that's her term. But what that term means to her and what we understand that term to mean is the conflict between one's gender and one's professional identity. In the case of Lelia Robinson and Mary Ann Green, I think they were particularly focused on that in terms of where in the legal world might women find a place. Should it be behind the scenes doing office work? Mary Ann Green thought that it could also be in the courtroom. Should it be focused on issues in part that are most relevant to women? For instance, perhaps family law, divorce law? Should it be general legal practice? They were wrestling with those sorts of very real dilemmas.
And does that wrestling still go on today, but perhaps not in the exact same spheres that you're talking about?
Well, I think there's no question that wrestling still goes on. I think that certainly in very modern times, the biggest area of wrestling seems to be on the work-life balance issue, I would say.
All right. We'll touch upon that more in a moment because it has a lot to do with the advancement of women in the legal profession today. But just to fulfill my promise to listeners, I do want you to share the story behind the inspiration for Wonder Woman and how that we have a Massachusetts lawyer to thank for that. Can you share that story with us?
Certainly. Wonder Woman was actually created in 1941, so in the early days of World War II. And she was based on a graduate from Boston University Law School who was admitted to the bar in 1918. And it was her husband, her name was Elizabeth Marston, and it was actually her husband who created the character of Wonder Woman loosely based on his wife. And so it is interesting because often over the years I've seen, we all see birthday cards and various other things caricaturing women who try to do it all as being a kind of Wonder Woman. And it wasn't until working on this book that I actually realized that, in fact, the genesis for Wonder Woman was not simply a fantasy, but actually a real woman who was working to both support her family, further her career, and was an early woman lawyer.
And I love how you note that that Elizabeth Marston and her husband worked in Harvard psychology labs, and they worked to develop a polygraph lie detector test, which then inspired the creation of Wonder Woman's magic lasso of truth.
Yes, that is really just one of those factoids that is really priceless and hopefully memorable.
Well, let's move on to maybe some more less comical, more substantive issues regarding women in the law in Massachusetts, and that is the various areas of our legal system and of the law that you feel that the presence of increasing numbers of women have actually had an impact on. And Judge Botsford, I wonder if you might share what you think some of those areas are.
Well, I think, you know, I think having women have had an impact on reproductive rights, on the law of divorce, on the law of sexual assault, sexual violence, what else would you add, Barb?
Reproductive technology, certainly employment, all its facets. I mean, I don't know if there's really any areas of law that we could think of that, or very few areas of law, certainly that affect public policy been changed.
I guess the question is do you think the change would have come at the pace that it did? Some people might argue it hasn't been fast enough, but without having women in significant numbers in the legal profession.
Oh, I think that having the woman in significant numbers was absolutely crucial in all different, I mean, not just as lawyers in the courtroom, but also lobbying the legislature, as legislators sometimes themselves. It took a critical mass to even sort of recognize and acknowledge all these issues that needed to be addressed, and both and biases of all levels, direct biases, subtle biases, and things like that.
Judge Botsford, you at one time had the opportunity, of course, to work with former Chief Justice Margaret Marshall.
Correct.
And she's featured in the book Breaking Barriers in a Q&A form. And I've actually had quite a few in-depth conversations with her as well. And it's interesting to me because she, even when you ask her directly, and I can understand if you don't necessarily want to respond to this, so Barbara, please feel free to jump in. But she's one of those women who doesn't say, yes, being a woman has made a difference to me in my legal profession. And I wonder, why you think that is. I feel that's pretty common amongst very successful female lawyers and judges, that they don't necessarily want to say, because I'm a woman, I got to hear this place that I am, or that being a woman has had an effect on how I view the law. What's your thought about that?
Well, I don't know the context in which your conversations were, but if you're asking me why I think she says that, I think I'm going to defer.
Okay.
I think my own sense of that is that it seems to me at some level, of course, being a woman affects how you look at the law. Not that you're consciously thinking about it, but it's just part of one's makeup as much as anything else might be. That you come from the Northeast, that you come from the Southwest, that you grew up in a family of 18 as opposed to one. So I just feel like it's a factor. Not only is it part of your makeup, but I think it's also, and particularly if I think, coming of age when I did, which is quite a bit before Barbara, where it was a time of women's liberation, so these issues were very much at the forefront of what people were thinking and talking about. So it would be very hard to say that this sort of, at some level, consciousness of these points you couldn't put aside.
Right. Well, see, here's why I ask, because this is an issue that comes up rather frequently, and I remember that President Obama, when he nominated now Justice Sotomayor to the U.S. Supreme Court, I mean, he sort of, as directly as I've heard it said, he said that we need to have a legal system that is reflective of the society over which it's making decisions. And so in her case, it had to do not only with the fact that she's a woman, but also a minority. But for women in the law profession, and particularly women who sit on the bench, on the one hand, as you were saying, they bring to the bench the totality of their life experience, which for women is different than men. But it, of course, it differs in a million different ways, depending on who you are. But on the other hand, justice is supposed to be blind, right? So, you know, I'm wondering how much does it matter, the number of women we have on the bench, for example?
Well, I think it does matter because, yes, justice is blind. And in broad brush, you know, it may be true that there is a principle here that needs to be upheld or changed or whatever. But the way you look at the facts, the way that you assess what's important and not what's important, you bring your life experiences to that. And so if being a woman is one of those life experiences, I think it can't help but make a difference. And I have to say for myself, I think that having a bench that is reflective of not the diversity of society, yes, but also different philosophical perspectives is really important. I mean, you don't want lockstep thinkers that all think the same way, I don't think. It doesn't really advance very much development or growth of ideas. So.
Barbara Berenson, your thoughts on that?
Well, I do think it's very important to that what people bring to the bench in terms of their life experiences does affect how they hear things, just all the things that Judge Botsford was just saying. I also think as a society, since the judiciary is what people look to for justice, I think it's also very important that it reflect what are the composition of our society. So I think besides whatever outcome difference it might make, it's extremely important for people to be able to look to the judiciary and see men and women, see representatives of all ethnicities and so forth. I think that that's just a very important part of who we are as Americans and what our system of government should look like.
In the last couple minutes we have, I'd like to talk about the challenges or opportunities that women in law in Massachusetts face today. And Judge Botsford, you were talking about this a little earlier, that, for example, we were mentioning that almost half of students in law school today are women. But on the other hand, when you look across private law practices, the number of women who are full partners is diminishingly small. And so there seems to be a very familiar pattern of a lot of women entering a field, but not necessarily ascending to the highest ranks of those fields. What is it about the law in particular on the private practice side that continues this conundrum?
Well, I think part of it is, as Barbara was talking about, work-life balance, because I think that if you take a traditional model of a law firm where billable hours makes a great deal of difference and rainmaking makes a great deal of difference, those are things. If you are a woman with children and you're the caretaker or a big part of the caretaker, you're not going to have those hours or opportunities. So part of it, I think, is the way the model is structured. But, you know, I also think that the legal profession as a whole is at a crossroads. It can't continue the way that it is. I think law firms, private law firms are shrinking. It's too expensive. So I think that new models are going to be coming for law in general that may open things up a great deal.
Well, in the last just under a minute we have, Barbara Berenson, is this part of why the subtitle of the book is The Unfinished Story of Women Lawyers and Judges in Massachusetts?
Oh, very much so. I mean, we stopped, obviously, in 2012. We're eager to see what comes next. And when we wrote this book, I mean, we both felt tremendously proud and happy about just the enormous strides that women have made in law. But there's also a long way to go. And one of the areas where the challenges are the greatest, as we've been talking about, is in the fact that while women have so many choices nowadays, the labor market itself and the work structure doesn't necessarily accommodate a flexible model for all.
Well, hopefully we'll see, we'll all live to see that change, at least for the better, not just for women, but for everybody. Well, the new book is Breaking Barriers, The Unfinished Story of Women Lawyers and Judges in Massachusetts. It is absolutely chock full of wonderful stories of pioneering women here in the Bay State. It is co-edited by three women, two of whom are the Honorable Margot Botsford. She's an Associate Justice on the Massachusetts SJC. Judge Botsford, such a pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much for coming in.
For me as well. Thank you.
And Barbara Berenson, Senior Attorney at the Massachusetts SJC as well. Barbara Berenson, great to have you back on the show. Thank you
so much.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at Boston.com. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Have a wonderful weekend and join us again on Monday for more Radio Boston.